It's a scene that is becoming alarmingly common. A man over 50, after 3 decades of marriage, quietly packs a single bag. He walks out the front door, leaving his family in a state of shock, asking one question: why? This is the gray divorce epidemic. Statistics show the rate for this age group has doubled, but the narrative of a midlife crisis, of a new partner, is fundamentally wrong. The shocking truth is that he often isn't leaving for another woman. He is leaving to be alone. He has, in his mind, given up on the marriage. This isn't a failure of passion, it's a calculated escape. In this video, we will decode the 4 deep, unspoken reasons why these men are walking away. Consider a man like James. For 35 years, his entire identity was built on being 2 things: a successful engineer and a provider for his family. His schedule, his stress, and his sense of accomplishment were all tied to these roles. He was the one who solved the complex problems at work and the one who paid for the college tuition at home. Then, within the same year, he accepts a retirement package and his youngest child moves across the country. Suddenly, on a Tuesday morning, he wakes up with nowhere to be and no one depending on him in that same way. He is no longer the boss or the dad in the way he understands. This is the first and most profound driver: identity dissolution. In simpler terms, it's the terrifying realization that the roles that defined your entire existence are gone, leaving a profound existential void. This void is almost always triggered by the twin forces of retirement and the empty nest. For decades, traditional masculine identity was built on the solid pillars of what I do, my career, and who I provide for, my family. These roles are so consuming that they often leave little oxygen for a separate, individual self to develop. The psychologist Carl Jung called the essential work of the second half of life individuation. Here's what that really means in practice. It's the journey of discovering who you are apart from your social masks and duties. But for a man who never did that work, who only knows himself as a provider and a father, the end of those roles doesn't feel like freedom. It feels like an erasure. If this feels familiar, that's because it's the silent crisis happening in millions of homes. He's no longer needed in the only way he knows how to be needed, and this sense of obsolescence is suffocating. This is the part most people get wrong. The man isn't just bored, he feels invisible, like a ghost in his own home. The life he built now feels like a museum to a person who used to exist. His wife may still see him as the man he was, or perhaps she has evolved and found new purpose in her post-parenting life, while he feels left behind, stuck in an identity that no longer fits. The departure, then, is not an escape from his family, but an escape from this hollow shell. It is a desperate, frantic attempt to find, maybe for the first time, a sense of self that is not based on his utility to others. He is running from the profound nothingness he feels inside, but there is something even more devastating than losing yourself. That something more devastating is the slow, grinding realization that peace has become more valuable than the relationship itself. This is the second driver, the exhaustion of peace. In the first decade of a marriage, couples seek passion and connection. By the 3rd and 4th decades, many men find themselves prioritizing something else entirely: the simple absence of conflict. This isn't about one single dramatic fight. It's about the cumulative weight of 30 years of small negotiations, compromises, and unresolved disagreements. It's the constant, low-level emotional static of managing another person's expectations. He is no longer angry. He is, in a way that is almost impossible to articulate, just tired. The emotional cost of maintaining the connection now feels like a debt he can no longer pay. Psychologists have a clinical term for the dynamic that creates this: the demand-withdraw cycle. Here's what that really means in practice. One partner, often the one feeling the disconnect, demands engagement. This sounds like we need to talk, or you never share your feelings anymore. The other partner, feeling criticized or overwhelmed by the perceived conflict, withdraws. They become silent, leave the room, or turn on the television. This isn't done out of malice. It's a learned defense mechanism to keep the peace. But the result is toxic. The more one partner pushes for connection, the more the other pulls away. This cycle, repeated thousands of times over 30 years, doesn't just create distance, it kills intimacy. It teaches both people that attempting to connect only leads to frustration, until, eventually, they both stop trying. The result of this cycle is a state I call the functional partnership. This is the stage where the relationship is no longer an intimate one, but a logistical arrangement. It's a marriage that runs smoothly, but is emotionally desolate. You coexist. You discuss groceries, vacation plans, and news about the children, but you do not discuss your inner worlds. You operate like efficient business partners, managing a complex household, but the connection is gone. And this is the critical part. For many men, this functional silence is, for a time, preferable to the noise of conflict. He has retreated so far into himself that the marriage becomes a truce, a cold peace built on the unspoken agreement not to actually talk about anything that matters. This hollows out the relationship from the inside, leaving only a structure. One man in this exact situation described it perfectly. He said, "I realized I was more in love with the idea of an empty house than I was with the person I shared it with." This isn't about hating his partner. It's about being profoundly bone-deep tired. The constant negotiation, the management of another person's emotions, the low-level friction, it all adds up to an exhaustion so profound that the only perceived cure is total solitude. He doesn't want to argue anymore. He doesn't want to fix it. He just wants it to be quiet. He has reached a point of emotional depletion. For many of these men, there is a third realization that changes everything. This brings us to the third and most pragmatic reason, the end of the contract. For the boomer generation and many after, marriage was often less about shared romantic passion and more of an unspoken social contract. What does that mean in practice? It was a functional partnership built on clearly defined traditional roles. The man's primary role was the provider. His duty was to offer financial security, stability, and protection. The woman's role was often the nurturer, managing the home and raising the children. This isn't a judgment, it's a diagnosis of the operating system they were running. For a man raised in this model, his entire worth within the marriage was inextricably linked to his ability to fulfill this provider role. His job wasn't just his job, it was his primary contribution to the family's existence. The moment a man gives up is often when he looks at the ledger and concludes that this project is complete. Think about it in the coldest, most logical terms. The children have been raised, educated, and are now financially independent. The mortgage, the symbol of a life's work, is finally paid off. The retirement accounts are secured. The central mission that defined his identity as the provider for over three decades has been accomplished. The need that held the entire structure together is gone. The job, as he understood it, is finished. When the functional why of the marriage evaporates, he is forced to look at what's left. And if what's left is the hollow silence we discussed in the last section, the logical conclusion, in his mind, is that the arrangement is over. This logic is accelerated by a critical modern factor, the evolution of female identity. Over the past few decades, women have rightfully and powerfully expanded their lives beyond the home. They've built careers, cultivated their own financial independence, and found new sources of meaning. This fundamentally changed the original contract. The woman no longer needs the man as a provider in the same way. But for the man who was only ever taught to be a provider, this evolution makes his role obsolete. If his wife has her own career and her own money, what, he asks himself, is his purpose in the arrangement? She evolved, but he remained stuck in the old script. If this feels familiar, it's the quiet tension in millions of marriages where one partner's independence feels like the other's redundancy. This sounds cold because it is cold. It is a pragmatic, almost transactional assessment. A man who sees his marriage this way isn't motivated by emotion. He's motivated by a sense of completion. It's like an entrepreneur who spent 30 years building a company. He doesn't hate the company. He's just done with it. He's proud of the accomplishment, but he no longer wants to be involved in the day-to-day operations. The marriage was a job he performed, a duty he fulfilled. And now that the terms of the contract have been met, he feels he is, for the first time, free to clock out. But there is one more reason, and it is the most silent and heartbreaking of all. This final driver is the one that solidifies the decision. It's the difference between solitude and loneliness. Solitude is choosing to be alone. It is restorative and peaceful. Chronic loneliness is feeling invisible while sitting next to someone you've known for 30 years. This is the fourth reason, the escape from invisibility. After decades, the silence and the functional partnership we discussed earlier curdle into something else. It's not just a lack of connection, it's a profound sense of not being seen. He feels that the person he is today, his thoughts, his fears about aging, his quiet hobbies, his changing worldview, is completely invisible to his partner. He feels he has been stereotyped in his own home, reduced to a set of functions. The man who fixes the sink, the man who pays the bills, the man who watches TV. This feeling of being unseen is often built on a foundation of chronic low-level criticism or dismissal. It's the constant eye roll when he tells a story. It's the sigh of impatience when he can't find his keys. It's the way his opinions are dismissed or corrected in front of friends. After years of this, he learns that it is simply safer to be silent. He stops sharing his thoughts, not because he has none, but because sharing them leads to friction or dismissal. He emotionally shuts down as a form of self-protection. He begins to live an entirely separate parallel life, but one that is lived inside his own mind. He may seem present, he's sitting right there on the sofa, but emotionally, he left the building years ago. He is, in effect, already gone. Here's the moment of chilling clarity that often comes with this. He'll find himself having a 5-minute conversation with a barista about a shared interest, perhaps a love for old music or a specific author. In that brief, simple exchange with a stranger, he feels more seen and heard than he has in a decade at his own dinner table. That stranger, in 5 minutes, acknowledged his actual self, not the husband role he performs. This contrast is devastating. It proves to him that connection is still possible, but that his home, the place that should be his refuge, has become the one place on earth where he is fundamentally, painfully, and chronically alone. This is the part most people don't understand. The home isn't empty. It's just lonely. This loneliness is the final catalyst. There's a story of a man whose dog, his companion of 15 years, passed away. He was devastated, but his wife's reaction was one of practical annoyance. She was more concerned about the carpet than his grief. For him, that was the moment. It wasn't just that she didn't share his sadness. It was that she didn't see it. His profound emotional experience was met with logistical indifference. This is the ultimate loneliness. It's the realization that you are navigating your deepest pains and your quietest joys completely alone, even when someone is in the next room. At that point, leaving isn't about anger. It's about survival. But it is here that this entire story takes an unexpected turn. This is the moment we must re-examine the entire narrative, because this is the part everyone gets wrong. Society, and often the families left behind, rushed to paint this man as the villain. We need a simple story, so we cast him as selfish, reckless, or chasing a youthful cliché. We picture the new sports car, the younger partner, the desperate attempt to rewind the clock. But for the man we are describing, the one who leaves for solitude, not for another relationship, this narrative is a complete distortion. This is the turn, the pivot from escape to search. He is not a villain running from a responsibility. He is a seeker running toward an authenticity he has never been allowed to have. And here is the great misunderstood truth of his departure. He isn't leaving his wife for another woman. He is leaving the husband role to finally meet himself. He is abandoning the hollow costume, the identity built on provider and fixer, to find the man who existed before he became defined by his functions. This rebellion is almost always triggered by the cold, hard math of time. At 50 or 60, a man is acutely, often brutally, aware of his own mortality. He has more days behind him than he has in front of him. He no longer sees an infinite runway, he sees a finite one. This realization ignites what can only be called a rebellion against the slow death of the self. It's an urgent, visceral panic against the idea of dying before he ever truly lived. In simpler terms, he looks at his life of quiet exhaustion, of functional partnership, of deep invisibility, and he makes a calculation. He can no longer afford to spend his most precious, non-renewable resource, time, on an existence that feels hollow and inauthentic. The decision to leave is no longer about his marriage. It's about his life. It is a desperate, existential act of self-preservation, a refusal to go quietly into a future that feels like a long, grey, meaningless hallway of regret. This is, at its core, a search for meaning. The psychiatrist Viktor Frankl, a Holocaust survivor, famously stated that man's primary motivation is not pleasure, but a will to meaning. For 30 years, this man's meaning was clear and socially prescribed. Provide, protect, and build. But with that contract complete and his identity dissolved, he is left in a state of existential crisis. This turn recontextualizes all four reasons for his departure. The loss of identity is no longer just a crisis. It is the invitation to build a new one. The exhaustion of peace is no longer just burnout. It is the clarity that his new purpose is internal, not external. The end of the contract isn't a failure. It's the liberation from a role he has outgrown. And the escape from loneliness isn't just about leaving his partner. It's about reconnecting with himself. His departure is a radical and often clumsy attempt to find a new why. He is finally, after 50 years, asking the most terrifying and essential question a person can ask. If I am not this, then who am I? So, the moment a man over 50 gives up on marriage is rarely a single event. It is the end result of a long internal diagnosis. It is a four-part storm that gathers slowly over decades. First, the loss of identity leaves him in an existential void as the roles that defined him, provider and father, evaporate, leaving him feeling obsolete. This void is then compounded by a profound exhaustion of peace, a bone-deep tiredness from 30 years of low-level conflict and emotional negotiation, making him crave solitude above all else. This exhaustion allows for a cold, rational calculation. The contract is over. He sees the project of raising a family and paying the mortgage as complete, and his job as provider finished. But the final emotional break comes from the most painful realization of all: chronic invisibility. He feels unseen, unheard, and fundamentally alone in his own home. When these four forces combine, the departure becomes, in his mind, not just an option, but the only logical path to survival. This grey divorce epidemic, therefore, isn't just a trend. It's a reflection of a massive shift in our society. We are all living decades longer than our ancestors. A lifelong marriage in 1950 was functionally shorter than the 50, 60, or 70 years couples now face. At the same time, the rigid social roles that held these traditional marriages together are dissolving. These men are often the generation caught in the middle, raised with one script for masculinity, but living in a world that has thrown that script away. The rules have changed, but they were never given the new ones. The decision to walk away, then, is not an act of simple selfishness. It is a radical, painful, and often clumsy attempt to find meaning, to find peace, and to find himself before his time runs out. It is, perhaps, his final attempt to write a new script for the last act of his life.